The choices you make within your constraints determine how creative you are or not. And the ability to make increasingly creative or effective choices really comes back to practice. And the way you practice is you ship anything, even if it's bad, on a cadence and hold tight your desire to be good while you do so.
As a business owner, you'll know you either need to hire a writer or become a writer. Welcome to the show where you'll hear conversations covering everything you need to know about writing for and about your business. Welcome back to Let's Talk Writing. Today's guest on the show is someone who's going to help us push ourselves creatively and make work that matters. Jay Akunzo is an author, speaker, show host and brand consultant. His narrative style podcast, Unthinkable, has been heard by over a million people worldwide. He says it's kind of like Radiolab, but for creators. In 2023, Jay founded a membership program, The Creator Kitchen, to help quality-obsessed creators experience consistent creative growth. Previously, Jay's worked in marketing and editorial roles at Google, HubSpot, ESPN, and as a creative leader for a tiny startup and the VC firm NextView. He says that his aspiration or delusion is to be the Anthony Bourdain of workplace storytelling. Jay says, my rally cry to you is simple but urgent. Keep making what matters. Okay, so welcome back to the show, and I'm excited to bring to you today, Jay Akunzo. Thank you for joining me, Jay.
Thanks for having me.
So one of the reasons I wanted to get you on here is because your content is so appealing in that you don't put yourself forward as someone who's got all the answers. Now, you're obviously someone with a really strong marketing background, but what you do is kind of ask questions, and it's like you're going on a journey with the community. And I think your big thing is about creating content that matters. So what I'd like to ask you about is, number one, what do you define as content that matters? Mm-hmm. And why is it so important to create content that matters? So we'll start with those two.
Yeah, sure. So I think historically you would define your content matters to others when it's relevant, right? And I think like you can almost plot this on, I'm picturing like a pyramid. Of, you know, what you're trying to do is march up the pyramid to be at the top, to stand out and be among a small number of things in your audience's world that they would declare as their favorite. Like there's only a few things that feel irreplaceable in your life, and it has nothing to do with whether or not you're just relevant to the audience. You know, like my favorite sports team is the New York Knicks, the basketball team. And for those who like sports or watch sports or know anything at all about basketball, the Knicks have been one of the worst teams for 20 plus years, for the vast majority of my adult life. They've been terrible. And yet they're still my favorite team. And that says something to me. Why is that the case? I have an irrational bias in their favor against other teams towards them. My favorite shirt, my favorite restaurant, my favorite type of food, my favorite city in the world. Like there's a long list we all have of things that are our favorite. And I think what we're going for is to resonate so deeply with others that we're in that crowd. Like this tippy top of this pyramid. So the bottom layer is to be relevant. That is no longer, I don't think enough for a business owner, an entrepreneur, a freelancer, a content creator to stop there. Because now you're among a ton of things in their world that's relevant. So one level up might be you're relevant and enjoyable. Again, I think that's now table stakes, because if you are talking about this topic or you are teaching this thing or you are serving this audience and your content is not enjoyable, it's relevant, but not enjoyable. It might be valuable, but excruciating to experience. The audience has so much choice that they can go find something that is enjoyable. So now, although it might be hard to admit, being relevant, being enjoyable, totally table stakes. Mm-hmm. So the top two levels of this pyramid, I think, is where we want to be. And that's to be impactful and personal. Yeah. Like to be impactful, I think about when you have impact, when something has an impact, you know, like a meteor on the moon. It leaves a dent. It leaves an impression. That's what we're trying to do, is not just help people follow a checklist, but to leave an impression where long after they're done following your prescription, or long after they're done listening to your show or reading your writing, something about the experience with you sticks with them.
Yeah.
It could be as simple as a turn of phrase, or it could be something more holistic than that. But there's something, even just a feeling or a vibe or an emotion. You know, it's the Maya Angelou idea of they won't remember what you said, they'll remember how you made them feel.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's a switch for some people, because I think everyone's trying to be relevant and maybe entertaining, and they forget, well, you have to be impactful. It's to be of use, but also be memorable, not just visible, memorable.
Yeah.
And then that last little piece, if you're relevant and you're enjoyable and you're impactful, is to be personal, which means you're adding your own personal vision for the work and the world, for your audience. You know, you're saying to the world, hey, the status quo isn't good enough. There's something broken about what we're doing or how we think or how we execute, or I'm just curious about things and no one seems to be asking these questions. So I'm going to go on a journey and figure this out. And I think we should go over there. That's the mountain peak. Let's go that way. And the pathway in between is why I'm creating content. I'm trying to figure out how we get there. And I'm talking to people or sharing my thoughts through my writing or my speaking. And I'm ironing out these thoughts in public in view of you. And I'm inviting you to come with me on that journey, because I think we ought to go that way. That's the vision I have for us.
Yeah, I really like that. And I just wanted to come back to something you said before about, you know, it's not enough with the checklists and things like that. Because I think when a lot of people start off, it's all about kind of SEO and how do you get people to land on your website and, you know, creating content that people are going to find. And then it's going one step further then, isn't it? So what I wanted to ask you is, I think a lot of my audience would not necessarily, I mean, they are content creators.
Sure.
But I think they primarily see themselves as business owners. But I know from talking to people, they want to go beyond that and create memorable content. So how do you do those two things?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think we run around a lot trying to reach people. Like, marketing has devolved into this idea of getting in front of people, and social networks, that's how they make their money, is they amplify things that basically create free ad inventory. Like, I don't know about the people listening. I'm pretty certain that this would be the case, that they're similar to you and me, which is, you know, their business does not necessarily thrive at being good at creating free ad inventory for Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook, et cetera. But that's essentially what they want, those companies. They want all this content that fits the mold that they see. Like, what's good on social is not necessarily what's good for you earning trust, you developing a relationship with the audience you want to serve for your business. And the greatest trick these networks ever played was convincing us that they're one and the same, that marketing is about getting in front of people, and we have people and use this type of content to get in front of them. Marketing is not about getting in front of people. Marketing is about ensuring others care. And so everybody's racing towards reach, and I think we ought to obsess over resonance. And like, reach is a piece of it, you know, and also reach gets a lot easier if you're resonating deeply. And the good news is we can all reach some people. Like, the thing that drives me mad is whether you're writing a newsletter or hosting a podcast, those are just two easy examples with content. You can look at a subscriber number, a reader number, a download number. And when people see that number is small, they go, how do I reach more people? I got to get my show or my newsletter in front of more people. Okay, but you have some people already paying attention to that. So allegedly, those are the people that already know you, already like you, already trust you. If they're not responding positively and passionately to what you're doing, you actually don't have a reach problem. You have a resonance problem. Because if you can't get the first 10, 15, 20, 100 to go, oh my goodness, you're so speaking my language. You're helping me feel seen. You're serving me. Thank you. And I got to share this with other people. If you're not getting a reaction, in other words, you're not resonating with a small group, why is reaching more people the solution? It's not. It's a lot more imperative for your business to ensure others care first. Then you go, okay, now with confidence, I can take this thing and put it elsewhere, repurpose it, lean into it, explore it more deeply, advertise it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Absolutely. And I think something that I've been doing a lot more recently is moving away from kind of short form content. And I, you know, I've always liked much more thoughtful content, deeper content that maybe you don't even put out so much, you know, you don't send out your newsletter as regularly, but you put in real thought into what goes into it, you know?
Right.
So I think if time is of the essence and you don't have that much time, it's really concentrating on, like you say, creating things that matter.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of creativity. It's actually not about resources, it's all about resourcefulness. And so if someone's saying, I'm not creative right now, I'm saying you're not being resourceful enough. It's not that you need more time or budget. So an example might be, I'll just use myself, like, just because I don't want to pick on anybody else. If current me could somehow go back in time and start a podcast at the exact same time as past me, like, let's say 2005 or 2015 version of myself, current me and past me, both making a show, both from scratch, both talking about the same topic, let's say marketing, my show would be absolutely better than past me because I've had more practice.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
But more importantly, we can add a little twist to this competition because now you're going, yeah, but you've done it so long, Jay. Okay. Fine. What if we both only had 5 hours to make the show? Or what if current me only had 1 hour and past me had 5? They have more time than I do. I would still feel confident that I could make a better episode today in 1 hour than I could in 5 hours. In other words, like, it's about the time and resources you have, how you use it. Creativity is just making choices, right? So a creative person goes, I'm going to make this choice instead of that choice. And it took me 30 seconds either way. But I'm reliant on, say, my own intuition in one case and the conventional approach in another. So it's not so much about the amount of time that you have to invest in a single project. It's about how you use that time. And if you'd like to use that time better, now this is why I used an analogy of me going back in time to compete with myself, you need practice, right? Yes. I think we all benefit from practice. And practice in every other field looks like a regimented, scheduled basis. Like, I have a writing calendar invite every Wednesday morning and I can't schedule a client, can't schedule my co-founder of my membership. I can't schedule anything else save for an emergency with my kids. I'll say, I'm sorry, I have a meeting, I can't move.
Yeah.
Because writing is a meeting. You know, I've always written a blog on the side. So we all benefit from practice. So those are the two levers we can pull. It's the choices you make within your constraints determine how creative you are or not. And the ability to make increasingly creative or effective choices really comes back to practice. And the way you practice is you ship anything, even if it's bad, on a cadence and hold tight your desire to be good while you do so.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's getting past knowing that you have to do that to start with, and you just have to do that practice, and it's not going to be really good at the start.
No, I mean, what is, like, I mentioned my kids, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and my son, Avery, he's 2. The way he uses language, like, he, you know, he's trying to get across the meaning of it, but he has very limited things he can pull from. You know, he's not practiced with his language. He's still getting across what he wants to say to us, right? But he's not holding back, that's for sure. My daughter, Aria, whenever she tries something new, gymnastics or art or whatever it is, she throws herself into it. And I think we see this among lots of kids all over the place, if not all kids. There's an innate creative ability and appetite, but we go through this educational system and then workplace system that seems to put a premium on having the right answer or knowing it'll work before you do it, which is not practice. That's a quick way to just race right to the average or worse.
Yeah. Yeah. This idea of being curious about things, isn't it? And I always say, you know, I'm curious about language.
Right.
I have my podcast not to say, hey, you know, I'm an expert in writing, come and listen to me. It's about just talking to different people and seeing what other people's processes are and just learning from that. And I don't like to hold myself up as someone who has all the answers as well, because I think that's so important. We're all learning, we're all doing. And, you know, I look back, I've only been at this a couple of years. I only started my business in 2020. But one of the first things I did, I'm really forever grateful. I had a mentor who said, start an email list. And I started an email list.
Yeah.
And that was great because I had only a few people on the list, but really, really engaged. You know, and it was a space for me just to play and practice. Yes. And those first emails were awful. I look back on them now, you know.
Oh my goodness.
And even now, I know that I look back on some that I've written not so long ago and think, oh dear. But it's about practicing. And like you say, seeing what resonates, seeing what people like. But those people that were on there right at the start are now coming out of the, you know, coming out and saying, hey, I'd like to work with you. And they've been on there 2 years and they've seen me going from kind of a beginner to a little less of a beginner.
Right.
but they're there and they've been on that journey with me, and they can see that I'm putting myself out there, and it's not easy, you know, and making the podcast, same thing. I recorded the first episode, I think, and it took me about 6 months to release it. But it's just like, you've got to do it. You've got to do that first bit. And then the next time it's easier, and eventually it will be better, you know?
I mean, there it is. Those two levers again. It's the choices you're making. Are you making them a little bit more bravely? Are you making them a little bit more based on your intuition than some kind of convention or other person's permission? And then what gives you the vision for what types of choices to make, or more so the confidence really, is have you done it a while? Have you committed to the craft and the practice? It's so funny you bring up all this stuff. Currently, I run a membership program for what I say are quality obsessed creators, like people who use content to grow their businesses, but they're really interested in creative growth and they don't need to hear from us 10x your results. And oh, by the way, the way to do that is creative growth. These are the people who have this motor to make. They're really excited to write, to speak, to podcast, to shoot video. You know, they're defined by that craft and they want to use it to grow an audience, promote a cause, promote a product, grow their business. And those people feel isolated right now, because a lot of people on social media, they're looking for the hack, they're looking for the cheat, you know, everyone's kind of blending in, and these companies, these social networks are rewarding that and encouraging that. And they feel like they don't really have a home. So it's like, okay, we're going to create the creator kitchen, where it is about, you know, cooking like a master chef of content and not so much a line cook. But if you compare that, those people, to folks that might be beginning, or look at some of these members like, wow, you know, I wish I could create like them. The difference really isn't any kind of innate gift. The difference I find is the willingness to be bad is a really bright line between those people that you're like, they're prolific and high quality somehow at the same time, and everyone else. Like the willingness to be bad, not at the expense of wanting to be good. They hold tight to that desire to ship quality things and serve others well. But they know the way to get there is to have that cadence, to have that practice, and really like try things on for size. It's like looking at a rack of clothing and deciding, I'm going to pick this because it seems right. Like my gut is telling me, my taste is telling me, but then the only way to tell is you put it on. And then you go, nope, this isn't it. I'll take off this paragraph. I'll put on this paragraph. I'll kill this project. I'll start this project. I'll say it this way. Nope, it didn't hit. People didn't respond. I'll say it that way. So like really under the hood of really great creative work, whether it's the thing you're known for or it's a driver of your business and you want to be known for something else, it really is all these tiny decisions. And so the way to make things that really impact others is you just zoom into the tinier decisions and figure out how to mix and match and change what you're doing. That doesn't look like it's what the best practice says. It looks like it's what your intuition was urging you to try.
Yeah, that sounds great. I mean, that your creator kitchen sounds fantastic. So we'll definitely link to that in the show notes. Yeah. I'd like to come back to something you just said then about moving away from convention and best practice. So this is going back to something that you wrote in your book, Break the Wheel, which I think was 2018.
Yeah. 2018. I had the book baby. Then my wife had our first baby. I'll never forget the date. So
I hope you don't compare it like that to your wife.
Oh, no. The reason I bring that up is I used to say, oh, wow, writing a book, it's really like, it's like birthing a project into the world. And then my wife actually gave birth and I was like, I will never again use that metaphor for anything in the world.
Good. Okay, so you talk about, in Break the Wheel, you talk about ditching best practices and doing the best for you in your situation.
Yeah.
And you write, you say, informing our decisions based purely on conventional wisdom only biases our thinking towards whatever most people are saying or doing. This type of thinking doesn't guarantee we'll create exceptional work, not without knowing how, if it applies to us. So what was it that made you decide to go towards ditching best practice?
I wanted to be a sports journalist. And when I was starting my career, I really appreciated human interest stories about athletes, because sports was a great microcosm of all of humanity. And when I left school and started, I actually got into sales at Google. That was my first job out of college. I was not in sports, but I was writing on the side. I was writing for myself and writing about sports. But I saw business now as this new microcosm of all humanity. And the experience that I got of other people's content, and even more so when I moved out of Google and into the startup world, I switched from sales to content marketing, which was this emerging thing at the time. All the content I was getting, it felt really sterile. It felt like there was no emotional impact or resonance or connection with the audience. there was an emphasis on like shortcut culture and short-termism and how you published or what you published. People were writing to the bots and the algorithms. You know, you can almost, a cynic would say, well, look, it's 2023. I'm talking about 2008. It's 2023. Not much has changed, Jay. Like, if anything, it got worse over here. And I'd say, yeah, but like, if, you know, McDonald's is a very popular way to make beef, that doesn't mean you have to make it that way. So the popular ways to make content always annoyed me. But what annoyed me more in those periods of my life, you know, another stop along the way was I was head of content at HubSpot for a year. And I did not like that approach to content at all either. And it was all best practice based. So it started with frustration. Why does this content feel sterile and hollow? Like, you could remove the byline, remove the brand, remove the name, and it could be anybody. It's a commodity. The source of the commodity didn't matter. So the only way to win is you have to rank first or shout louder. You have to reach your audience before everyone else because everyone else is offering the same stuff. There's no defensibility. There's no differentiation. There's no emotional resonance. Why is that the case? Like, that was where it started, honestly. Why is there so much junky or at least commodity content? It's best practices. It's all these things people point to go, well, this is what works, or I was told to do it this way, or it seems like they did it that way, so I will too. You know, where's the think for yourselfers? Where's the taste and the craft and the intuitive decision-making? All of which, by the way, goes on with artists, musicians, you know, writers, people that create content that withstands the test of time. And I don't mean the next great novel. You know, I could mean the newsletter writer who identifies as a writer and just writes amazing pieces. You know, why aren't we taking our cues there?
I was just thinking about you. You've got a podcast, haven't you, called Unthinkable? Mm-hmm. And your titles for your podcast episodes are brilliant. And they're not in any way, you know, how you can do this or that.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
You have, what do you call it? The one, remind me now. What do you call it? Your one piece where you do your little monologue.
One shots.
Yep. And the one today, I was just listening to it in preparation for our chat, was about Wu-Tang, wasn't it?
So, the name of that episode was You Are Wu-Tang.
Yeah, and it's brilliant. You know, it's brilliant. I wouldn't, if I didn't know you hadn't been, I mean, the reason I heard you is because a previous guest of mine on the podcast, Lara Eastburn, and she talks about,
she's
you know,
best.
Lara.
Oh, that's so nice, Lara,
She mentioned you on the podcast when she came on, and I went and found out, and I thought, oh, this is great. And so I binged all the stuff, read the book, listened to your podcast, subscribed to the newsletter.
Thank you.
And that's the way, isn't it? It's not like I went and Googled, you know, how to increase podcast listeners or how to create, you know, because I wouldn't have found you in that way.
Sure.
The way I found you was through recommendation, word of mouth, you know.
There's no secrets, but if there is one, maybe it's that, which is, you know, a lot of marketers or people who practice marketing in some sense for their business, I think when they hear marketing, they immediately picture a funnel and, you know, top of funnel is awareness and the bottom is conversion or maybe even more so evangelism, people sharing your cause. Yeah. I think your work gets better and I think your results get better if you picture not a funnel, but like concentric circles where the outer circle, the biggest circle is total strangers and the bullseye in the middle is super fans. Like the people who talk about you to other people, buy from you, give you feedback, like invaluable source of data and revenue and even customer acquisition. And I think that the object of marketing is not to go to the outer rims, not to go to total strangers or passive observers, because that's really inefficient and expensive to convince somebody who's got a cold relationship, no relationship with you, to go all the way through all the relationship phases and then buy from you, right? I think our jobs are to start somewhere in the middle-sized rings of like, they're observers or maybe they're active audience, but not loyal. Like for now, they're paying attention to you, but someone else will come along they'll chase that person for a while and drop you. Like that's not loyalty. Can you create loyal audience, but more so super fans and really bring them into the center to resonate deeply with them? Because if you're doing that, then they'll go get you people on the outer rings for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's what you just described to me was like, Lara has been, you know, she helped me pilot an early version of my membership group before the Creator Kitchen about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. She has been on my newsletter and I recognize the name and I've had calls with her and she said something nice about me to you. And now I have an opportunity I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah. And I mean, she's another one where her content just stands out. And I don't even remember. I think I saw maybe it was a Facebook ad or something. And I just signed up for her newsletter and she sent me the newsletter. And I was like, wow, this is the best newsletter I've ever read. And I just emailed her back straight away. And I said, can you come on the podcast? It was just that memorable and that different to everything else I'd been seeing and, all the kind of boring stuff.
That's the concern I have. Maybe like one of the core concerns for entrepreneurs, for anybody who's running a business or contributing to the business in the way they show up publicly. We're very trained because it's optically very appealing. Our ego wants it and other companies incentivize it to focus on our visibility. But I think there's a real tendency to try and be more visible, but not necessarily more memorable. But if you were to just meet somebody one-to-one who could help build your business in some way, they're a customer, they're a partner, they're an investor, whatever. Like, you know that the job is to like form a real relationship with that person, to be memorable.
Yeah.
And also you wouldn't do it through some peacocking style gimmick. Like, you wouldn't, like a lot of marketing feels like stunt-like to get attention. That's not what you do. You try and be of use. You try and insert your personality, tell stories from your own lived experience. Like the shortcut to all this, the phrase I try to help our members understand is to get your creative fingerprints all over the work.
Yeah.
Because there's something about you that needs to come through and it will, even if you don't try. It's like saying everybody has a brand, even if they're not consciously building one. That's true because others have a perception of your brand. So you're better off doing it proactively. The same with you and your actual content on a one-to-one basis.
Yeah.
The person making the thing, you're going to influence that work no matter what you do. I think we're better off learning how and controlling it because then we could be better and more effective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, so far what I've got from this is putting it out there, doing the practice, shipping it. It's all of that, isn't it? And being different, I suppose, is this kind of daring to play, experiment and be different.
Yeah. And there is like a business building case for this. You know, people are getting really good at grabbing attention, or if you don't know how, there's ample information to help you.
Yeah.
Some people are getting pretty decent at holding attention, which in and of itself is a challenge. But, you know, a great podcast is a good example of that. It's more of a time commitment. And you might think, okay, even though I run a small business, I have a podcast, so let me figure out how to get people to the end of the episodes. Like, you're holding attention. I think where people mostly struggle is converting attention from that like active audience, I'm engaging, to loyalty and to passion, to super fans. That's where we struggle, is to convert it. And I think for that, you know, it's not about like your opinions, and people use the phrase spiky points of view. You know, you take a strong stance, even if it's a true stance, which could be debated and that gets you some attention. It's not necessarily about that or your topics. It's certainly not about that. I think it's about developing a premise, which is like this specific, defensible concept that informs all of your work and is pulled from your personal vision. Like, I remember a while ago, there was a podcast about sales called Practice First. It was from a software company, like a startup. And the company behind it, Lessonly, ended up getting acquired. So all the Lessonly brand went away, unfortunately. But for a moment in the sun, this podcast shone bright among all sales podcasts because the team behind it went, you know, a lot of people are doing these generic sales expert interviews and like talking about tips and tricks for being better at sales. Well, what we believe, in other words, their premise, was sales is a craft you have to practice. And unless you're good at that, you're not necessarily going to be able to execute on all this advice others are giving you. So we're going to make a show that is specific and defensible because it's from our personal vision for the sales group we want to, or the sales audience we want to serve. The show was Practice First, exploring how the world's best practitioners execute their practice so you can steal from that in sales. So Olympians, sommeliers, and business executives, but they also talk to like, you know, basketball coaches, like anybody who has a sense of practice about them, they talk to try and learn from so that their sales audience could be better. Like, that stands out, not because it's super gimmicky or loud, but because it's more specific and it's more defensible as a premise. And so if you're looking for a good place to start, like, start there. What's frustrating you? And turn that into curiosity that you then pursue. And the pithy articulation of your curiosity is known as a premise.
And so that there is them looking at practice, individual practice, individual best practice, as opposed to conventional best practice.
Right. Like, forget the phrase best practices. Yeah. We're using the word practice a lot. I know this is confusing. We've said best practices. I've talked about creative practice. This is a third form of practice, which is literally like an athlete would practice.
Yeah.
So they looked at, okay, so you are an Olympian. You are a therapist. You are, sure, another sales executive. And there's something you do in your day or your week, which looks like trying to get better. Talk to me about those systems and techniques, right? And then let's use that as a lens to see sales. And so here's what salespeople can now learn from this Olympian or this sommelier or whoever. And so we want to make world-class practicers in the world of sales. How do we do that? We're going to go outside the echo chamber, talk to other people. We're going to stay inside our echo chamber, ask different questions.
Brilliant.
And it's not because they're genius level creatives. I mean, they might've been, but they're just curious, right? They're like, well, I'm frustrated that people don't see sales in this way. I want more people to see sales that way.
Yeah.
And let me follow the curiosity and the frustration that I have intuitively to make an original, in their case, or an original podcast.
One thing that I really wanted to ask you about, which we've kind of touched on a bit, and this is the gap between our taste and our skill. Because I know we've kind of touched on that, but it's this, you cite Ira Glass, I think, where nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone had told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good taste, but then there's a gap. So how did you get beyond that?
How did I get beyond that?
Yeah.
That's a really great question. I have always had a writing practice. I mean, since 2005, my first ever blog that I was just for me. So quickly, we keep using practice. Let's define it. A practice for a content creator is a project you control. In other words, nobody has to give you permission. That recurs. In other words, you have a cadence. I could tell you every Friday I ship. And it's not because I'm amazing on that day or inspired. It's because it's Friday. Like, it's like getting a ticket to a train. You would get on that train.
So important. Yeah.
You get on the train. And you have to be okay with that. Like, oh, this isn't my best, but it gets me to the next step. And that's what matters. Mm-hmm. It's the momentum and the learning and the insight. So you control it. It's on a cadence. And the metrics don't matter. In other words, you're not like looking for a commercial benefit directly. It's not like this is marketing for my business. You know, there's marketing like benefits, but you're not trying to over-engineer that because that happens at the expense of the practice. And so it's a thing for you to then improve your work and therefore your results everywhere you show up, including but not limited to that project. So for me, it's always been a block. Mm-hmm. So at first, I had a sales job at Google. And I would take like a lunch every week and I would write an article about sports. Then it turned into writing about the sports blog industry. So I rebranded the blog. Now I'm writing about the meta. Instead of writing about sports itself, I'm writing about other sports bloggers. Mm-hmm. And then I became interested in marketing and I had a personal blog about marketing. It's moved all over the years, but I've always had it. And I always found pockets of time, mornings, nights, weekends, lunch breaks, 10 minutes here and there, an hour here and there to just push it forward. And so today I have two forms of practice. I have a newsletter every other Friday and I have a podcast every other Monday. And the reason I ship either of those projects is not because it's the best thing I've ever put out. It's because it's my date to ship.
Yeah.
It's like I'm on deadline with myself. Mm-hmm. It's an obligation and a joy, quite frankly. So that's how I close the gap, is shipping a lot of work, getting a sense about these things so that it looks effortless when I'm doing it for some kind of commercial results, but it's on top of a lot of practice. There's like this weird metaphor I like to use. I'll end my rant here. The metaphor is, or the situation is, imagine an alien species could visit our world and like somehow scan the most creative people you can imagine. Like, think, if you're listening to this, about your creative hero in film and TV and, writing, doesn't matter. And this alien race has a technology where they can scan that person's body and see their entire history of content and somehow make sense of it instantly, right? All that alien race could conclude about the best creative people on our planet is, wow, this person who claims to be like a legendary writer that others adore, they're mostly bad at writing.
Yeah.
Substitute writing for anything. Because everybody is sitting on top of this mountain of junk that was in draft form or even shipped but not publicized, or the film you love had 7 or 8 versions that weren't very good to arrive at the thing that was. And like, that is, I take hope in that, that everybody's got to do stuff like that.
That is a perfect note to end on, I think. Wonderful. Yeah. So something that I ask all my guests, what book are you currently reading, or what book would you recommend to listeners? Apart from yours, of course, which
I was going to say, the books I read these days are all, they all have talking animals in it. So I think I'm reading a book called Owl Babies over and over and over and over again to my 2-year-old. And that's the truth. I will say that one of my favorite work-related books to recommend is, because mostly I say don't read, just go do, right? You're going to learn a lot more by doing than you are reading about doing. But one way to get started, it's a very enjoyable book called Out on the Wire. It's by a woman named Jessica Abel, and she followed around the best audio storytellers like Radiolab, This American Life, 99% Invisible, like epic revered podcasts. And she was embedded with their teams and saw the inner workings of how they developed stories. Okay. And she wrote this book, Out on the Wire, as a comic strip. It's all a cartoon. It's beautiful. Great. It's fun. Yeah. It's a breeze to read. And it's broken up by different sections of creative work. And you don't need to be a full team making radio or audio to appreciate it. You can be just creating in a, you know, an office by yourself every other week, writing an article, and you'll still benefit. So the book is called Out on the Wire.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, we'll link to that in the show notes then as well. Okay. And Jay, where can people connect with you? Where can they find out more about your membership and your work?
Well, you're listening to podcasts, so it's I'm a really quick hop, skip, and a jump over at Unthinkable with Jay Akonzo. Mm-hmm. We tell stories about unconventional choices that creative people made and why they made them to resonate deeper and get better results through their content. So just show for quality-obsessed creators, just like the membership is, and that's Creator Kitchen. So the show is Unthinkable. The membership is creatorkitchen.com.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
If you need more help with your writing, head on over to my website, lizzietangye.com, where you can find a ton of resources to help you. There's a free author workbook to help you decide which book to write and focus your ideas, along with daily email guidance from me for a week as you work through the questions in the workbook. You'll also find links to everything mentioned on this show in the show notes.